Have you ever thought about rebooting your life? Just changing everything? A lot of people have done it. I did it myself to a degree once. Now might be a great time to try it, with the world upside down and inside out. It's tough, but not impossible.
The Safari Park.
You're killing me, Larry.
Hello, Larry.
Hats off to Larry.
Larry. Fucking Larry.
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 Larry. Larry, get into bed now.
Come on, Larry. Larry. Larry.
So somebody told me I should have a look at this thing on Netflix. It's a serialized sequel to the old movie, The Karate Kid. If you've not seen the original, it's a fun diversion. Jersey high school kid moves to LA, gets his ass kicked by local punks, old Japanese dude teaches him karate, kid kicks ass on the bully and gets the girl. What's not to like? So I had a look, first out of curiosity to see how those actors had aged, and second to see where they might take the characters several decades later. Well, Mr. Miyagi, the Okinawan sensei, aged rather poorly. He's been dead since 2005. And surprisingly, the nasty blonde kid who played Ralph Macchio's opponent seems to have held up better than Ralph. I watched it a while and I thought, hey, what if you, me, anybody, could write a sequel to our own lives, a reboot? Would you do it? I bet most people would. Maybe not the whole thing, but definitely parts of it. Some people reboot all the time, right? With job changes and divorces. It's almost an American tradition. But divorce is just a way to try to erase a mistake and free you up for your next one. And a job change, that rarely fixes much. It's the career changes that really make a difference. Some people have the ability to fashion their own life story, their own script, and then somehow, and that somehow word is the magic element, somehow they manage to create the life they want, not one that was handed to them or forced on them, or, most commonly, that they just drifted into. Don't most of us tend to drift into our relationships, our jobs, our lives? I recall a professor I had in college asking the class which jobs they thought would be the most important jobs of their careers. People answered, the ones that pay the most, or when you moved into management, or got VP stripes, or a corner office, stuff like that. And then the professor told them they were all wrong. That more often than not, our most important job is the first job. You get it. And if you don't hate it, you probably keep doing it and try to advance and make more money. And maybe the company, the job, even the industry are anathema to you. And so one day you wake up and say, what the fuck am I doing? And how do I get out of this shit? But all your experience and skills and contacts are now rooted for years in an endeavor that's killing you. And now what are your options? Obviously, I listened to that professor, but I did not heed his words and spent considerable chunks of my life doing things I really didn't enjoy and were not in line with my talents. But that's a very fucked up part of the American culture and American educational system. Paul Simon said it brilliantly in his song Kodachrome. When I think back on all the crap I learned in high school, it's a wonder I can think at all, unquote. And when I think back on all the time and sweat and effort that I put into stuff that was antithetical to my very DNA, algebra, trig, chemistry, shit that bored me fucking senseless, and I should never have had to even look at, and yet I felt compelled to not merely pass courses in that crap, but excel at them. What a fucking colossal waste. I wish I knew me back then. I'd have wised me up a lot sooner. The younger people can find their bliss, or at least identify and reject the crap they don't like, the greater their chances of success. Of course, failure and success are very elastic words, aren't they? Most people would think that a mid-six-figure income is a benchmark of success, but plenty of Wall Street guys would consider suicide if they netted less than seven or eight figures every year. Of course, money isn't everything, and success isn't everything, because one man's success is another's failure. And then you have happiness, which, as I said in a recent episode, is kind of a dumb thing to strive for, because happiness is fleeting. It cannot be maintained. But peace, peace, baby, that's a worthy acquisition. But for our purposes, we'll just use happy. And the three things most people need for a happy life are: 1. Someone to love who will love you back. 2. A job / career / occupation you like. And 3. A nice place to live. If you're sitting on a piano stool with those three legs, you're probably sitting comfortably. If any one of them is missing, you'll be uncomfortable, maybe miserable. For the vastness of humanity, that's all we really want or need: some love, a purpose, a decent crib. Some, however, have another fire in the belly, right? A hunger for more, and they develop tunnel vision and singular purpose to achieve whatever it is they're after. Take Jeffrey Epstein, a super creep, but undeniably a huge financial success story. He really was a self-made man. He wasn't born wealthy. His mother was a housewife. His old man was a parkie in Brooklyn. But somehow, Epstein managed to climb the ranks on Wall Street. And even though he was fired several times, always for sleazy reasons, he managed to fail up and continued to make more and more money as he handled investments for billionaires. By the way, I devoted an entire episode to this topic entitled The Art of Failing Up. That's episode 180 in the April 2019 tab at thatlarryshow.com. It's one of my most downloaded shows. You might dig it. So Epstein failed up and up, and he owned jets and yachts and multiple mansions and, of course, his infamous private island in the Caribbean. And whether his neck was wrung by someone else or his own hand, he had an awful, ignominious end and left a legacy of horror and disgrace. But he did make a fuck ton of money. So clearly, he had that Jones, that ambition, and he achieved his ambitions at a fairly young age. There are many people in their late 20s and on into middle age still trying to figure out what they want to do when they grow up. And some of them feel inferior because of that. How do I know? Because they send me emails, that's how. I have one from a listener and a patron who lives in Europe. He asked me not to specify which country, and so I won't. Europe is a mighty big place, but I don't violate a confidence. His name is Gustav, and here's what he has to say. Hey Larry, I discovered your show when you guested on another podcast. He doesn't say which one, I've done a lot of them. He goes on to say, I'm a big fan now and I want to solicit your advice, or maybe some of the dojo senseis. I'm in my mid-30s, comfortable with a nice career, but to be honest, it's not what I always dreamed of. I've played piano since I was 9. Over the years, I've played with a number of bands, but none you'd have heard of. I have a girlfriend. We've talked about marriage and, of course, kids. She's great, and I love her. But once I settle down, my dream of making a living as a musician is finished. Part of me wants to quit my job and really give music my all for a year or two, so that when I'm an old man, I'll never have to say those awful two words, what if? I know you were a musician. I've heard a couple of your guitar tracks on your shows. Can you offer me some advice? Thanks for all the great entertainment, and take no shit. Gustav. Gustav. Mahler? No, he's with Mr. Miyagi. Gustav, let me first say thanks for listening and supporting the show and your very kind words. And even though I had a band for a few years, I never really felt like a musician. To me, real musicians are people who do give it their all and make a real living at it. It's funny how often freecore Johnnies call themselves musicians, or bloggers who've never earned a dime writing call themselves writers. Yet, when those same people put a band-aid on themselves, they don't call themselves doctors. Why is that? Now to the meat of your question. Maybe, just maybe, you're looking at the dilemma with too much of a black or white either-or perspective. Sure, if you marry and have kids, unless you marry some really rich chick, you cannot decide to hit the road and tour with a band that's not well established. That's a game for a younger dude with no commitments. However, that doesn't mean you have to abandon your musical aspirations. Lots and lots of legit musicians gig regularly while keeping their day jobs. Difficult, but not impossible. And if you do, who knows where you'll play and maybe connect with someone that might enable you to transition from your unfulfilling career to the one you really want. Gene Autry, the famed singing cowboy, was a railroad worker who had a nice job with steady pay, good bennies, etc. But he wanted a career in music. He recorded a couple of demos, began to build a following, and after some years, he broke through big with monster hits like Back in the Saddle Again and Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. And even though he had a number one hit record, he refused to quit his railroad job until he was certain the music career was solid. That guy went on to become sick rich. He bought a string of radio and TV stations, even the California Angels baseball team. And then there was Rodney Dangerfield, who sold aluminum siding by day and played dive clubs by night. His comedy career didn't take off till his mid-40s. But in the meantime, he did the day job, supported his family, the whole nine yards. Of course, those guys, and most people who rise to the top of their professions, other than politics, which is not a profession, but a cover for talentless parasites, those who really make it big usually have one thing in common, that fire in the belly. A friend of mine is a world-class pianist. He's fantastic. He's played and toured with the biggest acts you've ever heard of. And before enduring tours, he practices, no lie, about 11 hours a day. Imagine that. I can't. Another friend went to high school with Slash of Guns N' Roses, and she told me she never saw that guy without a guitar in his hands. Jimi Hendrix's father claimed his son would play his guitar even while sitting on the toilet. That is the X factor. That's the difference. That's what separates the goods from the greats. So, Gustav, you certainly have a marketable name. And God said that it is not good for man to be alone, so if you've found a girl that brings you peace, why not stay with her? Maybe she won't be an anchor. Maybe she'll put the wind in your sails. So keep playing. You never know who's listening. Best of luck to you, Gustav. So how would you create your sequel? How would you reboot your life? One critical factor would be the line between old you and new you. A neighbor of mine was a successful engineer in rocketry. He told me that the most important part of his work wasn't the research and development or the testing, it was the timetables. And he and the outfit he worked with gave themselves near impossible deadlines because otherwise, even with all the discipline you might think guys in that field would have, Parkinson's Law would take over. Parkinson's Law is the old adage that says, quote, work expands so as to fill the time available for its completion, unquote. And that is the procrastinator's lament, isn't it? Don't we tend to fuck off and allow ourselves distractions, and then we have to light the afterburners to meet the deadlines instead of methodically chipping away at the job? Every mediocre resume, filled with dead-end gigs and underachievement, should have a bold-faced bullet right up top that says, God-tier expert on TV, video games, social media, and porn. Time sucks aren't just time sucks. Their success sucks. Which brings me to the next sampling from the mailbag. This one's from Joe. And he's from the Bay Area in Northern California. Joe says, hey Larry, love the show. Been a listener almost since the beginning. I have a problem and I need some help. I had to close my restaurant due to the lockdown. I opened it 6 years ago, worked my ass off, and it was always profitable. Luckily, my wife is still working, but on her income alone, the debt is piling up. The only business I know is the restaurant business. I would cook or wait tables, but it's not like anyone's hiring. Any ideas? And he signs himself, trying not to take shit, Joe. Well, Joe, thanks for listening, for writing to me, and you surely have my sympathies. This lockdown bullshit must stop. I'm 1,000% on your side. For most of a year now, we've been buried in lies, bullshit, phony predictions of doom and junk science, and it looks as if there's no end in sight. However, that's California. As you know, I recently drove across the country and back, and I'm pleased to tell you that every state is not controlled by fear-mongering fucktards like this one. Even in New York City, they're allowing restaurants to reopen, albeit with 25% seating capacity. Yeah, it's a band-aid on a bullet hole, but at least a step in the right direction. Though I bartended in college, I know jack shit about the restaurant business. But I know that on my recent trip, some states were doing business as usual, while others were paralyzed with fear. Arizona, Texas, Oklahoma, Missouri, Kentucky, Arkansas, they had their heads on straight, while many others had their heads up their asses. Joe, for the time being, you need to go where the freedom and the money are, if at all possible. Try to score a job in a neighboring state where you won't have to get on a plane to visit your family. Live frugally like a monk. Take that job and try to put some cash aside while you wait out this tide of insanity. Guys have been doing that for their families forever. My own grandfather left his behind in Ireland and came to the USA. In a couple of years, he had a home ready for his family and they joined him in America. None of them ever went hungry or shoeless. It can be done. I visited a lot of big cities in America and my favorite was always San Francisco. Of course, it's been turned into an unlivable shithole by commie politicians. Maybe it's time to think about moving someplace with more opportunities, more freedom, and a lower cost of living. Good luck to you, Joe. Please let me know how you're doing. So it seems a lot of people are rebooting their lives, and for millions, it's not even a choice, it's a necessity. Earlier, I mentioned those who reach maturity and beyond and can't seem to find their bliss or even their niche. I guess that most of us fit into that category. Some of the bromides are stupid, like, do what you love and the money will come. Well, if you love being a shepherd or a mime or a poet, the money will not come. But if you don't want to get out of bed in the morning, you're probably in the wrong job. I know that feeling. I've lived that feeling. However, if you can't wait to get to your office or computer or truck or shop or restaurant, whatever it is, consider yourself blessed. And lastly, as you stand at the Rubicon of rebooting your life with your guts in knots of anxiety and trepidation, think of the words I once read on one of those cheesy signs you see on the lawns of small-town churches. It said, quote, life, a cinch by the inch, hard by the yard, unquote. That is so damn true. When you look at some enormous task in its entirety, it's overwhelming. That's when we're most likely to say, fuck it, and go have a beer. But if instead you attack the very smallest and easiest part of that undertaking, you will immediately feel a good rush of achievement and be emboldened to continue your own triumph of self-actualization. It really works. Hey, thanks for hanging with me once again. It's always great to be with you. Stop by the show page at thatlarryshow.com for more content and commentary and images. You know, every single episode of the show has a stunning original piece of artwork created by me. You can scroll through them all on Instagram. Pick one you like. Click a link to the episode. Great way to peruse the library. That's instagram.com/thatlarryshow. Follow the show on Twitter, Facebook. Just plug That Larry Show into the search bar. You'll find us. We have a lot of fun there. Write to me at thatlarryshow@gmail.com. And if you like what you heard and want to help me keep the lights on, click that Patreon button. That way you help me not only fight commies, you get to join the Take No Shit Dojo with access to dozens of bonus episodes and signed books and custom recordings and more. I'll see you next Wednesday, and until that time, take no shit.